Our last case is 2011-2026, the Disciplinary Council versus Mark Edward Dan. For the respondent, Mr. Matthews.
Good morning, Your Honors. Madam Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the Court. Again, my name is Alvin Matthews, and I'm here on behalf of the respondent, Mark Dan. This case is here because we disagree with the sanction recommended by the Board of Commissioners on Grievances and Discipline. We believe that any sanction that is given in this case, any sort of suspension that would be ordered, should be stayed, whether it's 6 months or whether it's 1 year. And you have both of those recommendations before you. We set forth a three-part argument.
You don't disagree with the order of a suspension. It's simply the disagreement here between this at this point is over whether or not it should be stayed.
That's correct, Your Honor. And obviously, in the Forbes case, and we want to talk about that case and how it's similar in some ways to this case, but different in some ways, this court made a firm pronouncement because the board had recommended a public reprimand. And this court said, well, we want to send a message to office holders that the public and to the public that office holders have to conduct themselves properly. And interestingly, you decided that case in 2009. Mr. Dan had already filled out the financial disclosure forms that are at issue in this case. He had already dispensed the improper compensation to the employees at the time that you decided the Forbes case. And so we would urge you to follow a similar reasoning that you did in the Forbes case and to stay a suspension. We believe that is the appropriate sanction for two misdemeanor convictions, okay? One involving the filling out of a financial disclosure form, the other involving improper compensation to employees. That's the record we have before us. These cases, fortunately, are not decided based on personality or whether we like the respondent or whether we like his personality. They're decided on the record.
Governor Taft's case was, a public reprimand?
That was a public reprimand.
And that involved the financial disclosure statement as well?
It did. And there was not as much in terms of money at issue, but there were actually more occurrences of failure to disclose in that particular case. And, you know, both of these offices, Attorney General, Governor, are very high offices. Both are high offices. We understand that the Taft case is different in some respects, but we believe that same sort of sanction should apply here.
Should it make a difference in the type of office that we're talking about when we're talking about the attorney for the state of Ohio, basically someone who is representing the state as its attorney? Should that make a difference?
Well, as we acknowledge in our brief, obviously that should be a factor. We don't think that should be given as much weight as the board appeared to give it, okay? We look at the attorney general office very similar to the office of governor.
You know, although both, in one situation you're talking about functioning as an attorney for the state of Ohio.
Right. And disciplinary counsel talked about that in their brief, the fact that Mr. Dan was attorney for the state of Ohio, and they made it seem as though this conduct really related to the practice of law when it really didn't. We're talking about which all office holders have to fill out these financial disclosure forms. He's not representing a client while he's doing this. The other conduct relating to the compensation of the employees had nothing to do with a client matter. These matters had to do with personal disclosures, and they had to do with whether he had to disclose monies that were from the political campaign fund on his personal ethics form.
So if I understand you, if these violations were significant to the actual performance of the duties of the office, that in essence could lead to a more severe sanction, in your
Precisely,
view.
Your Honor. Precisely. And when you look at the McGraw case from West Virginia that we cited in our brief, that was a circumstance. That particular attorney general was practicing as attorney general and had some conflict of interest, and nonetheless they gave him a public reprimand. Perhaps he should have gotten more, given the fact that that actually related to work as a lawyer, client representation, while he was attorney general.
But do you believe that this case is on all fours with Taft? Because clearly there seems to be some distinction. Not only is he the top law enforcement officer for the state, but should have clearly realized that, you know, chartering a plane and not disclosing that on his ethics application was a problem. He is the chief law enforcement officer of the state.
Well, it's not precise to Taft, and you know, we haven't said that, but we do believe the offices are similar, and what the board
But it's really the conduct, not the office, isn't it? I mean, the conduct here seems more egregious than that in the Taft case.
And we can certainly understand that point, that someone might suggest that, although the conduct in Taft was repeated more times, but the conduct here, the amount that was involved, the fact that a private chartered plane was involved, that is different, and we acknowledge that. However, what we want to say is, because disciplinary counsel will stand up and say, and they said it in their brief, that this is the first time the chief, you know, lawyer has been disciplined or is proposed to be disciplined. Well, we've had other high offices that have been disciplined. That's all we're saying. And you just don't look at the office in and of itself, that you do look at the conduct. And with respect to the disclosures that you're talking about, Your Honor, those disclosures were made on campaign finance reports, but they were not made on the ethics report. That's why it was so easy for the folks to find it out. It was at one place, but it wasn't on the other place. And so it's where they put the disclosures. And they clearly should have put them on the ethics report. I think Mr. Dan, and I want to get to the point of whether he took responsibility at the hearing. You know, they're suggesting that he did not take responsibility at the hearing, and nothing can be further from the truth. He did explain his conduct, and as you might expect, the Attorney General will certainly defer to other people to do legal research, and he talked about that. But at the end of the day, he said, I should have rolled up my sleeves. As a lawyer, I should have looked at this more closely. He also talked about an atmosphere in the office of groupthink. Everybody,
you know, Mr. Matthews, I hate to interrupt you because I looked at that argument, but it's not as if this is Mr. Dan's first public office. Mr. Dan has been in public office for some time. The requirement to file ethics disclosure statements, he should have been routinely familiar with. And so I find it somewhat disingenuous to contend that he should have rolled up his sleeves. He didn't know what was required.
Well, he had never held the office of attorney general before. Being a state senator is much different. You have staff, but when you're attorney general, you are surrounded with people. And he wasn't suggesting that to blame others. He was asked the questions of how did this happen and why did this happen. It's sometimes by me, sometimes by the panel, sometimes by Mr. Caligiuri. We all asked him questions to explain. And this is a great opportunity for this court to say what proper mitigation and testimony is, because if a lawyer cannot explain in a mitigation hearing, because that's essentially what it was, he had already admitted the violation, and he was just simply saying why. And I want to contrast this case to the Forbes case, because the Forbes case, in that particular case, Mr. Forbes walks in the room and he has his criminal defense attorney there, called as a witness to say the conduct didn't happen, the violations didn't happen. He himself takes the stand and says that the violations didn't happen, cutting against not only the criminal case, but also the disciplinary case. He had entered stipulations with disciplinary counsel, quite different than this case. Mr. Dan was physically shaken on the stand in terms of talking about how sorry he is about this conduct. And so to suggest that he's not taking responsibility is completely incorrect. We want to talk about Mr. Dan's rehabilitation. Since his resignation from office 4 years ago, a lot of water under the bridge. Criminal case, took responsibility with that. And these are mitigating factors, the fact that he has already been sanctioned in other forums, which has been taken into account by this court many, many times before, including on the Taft case, including on the Forbes case, including on the Carroll case. All of these cases, you've taken into consideration that whether there's been resignation, which is a big step to restoring public confidence, and it needed to be done, we can agree upon that. Whether there's criminal charges, that happened here. He took responsibility for those, didn't fight those, took responsibility. And then at the disciplinary case, while he explains, he does not deny the conduct at the end of the day. And that's extremely important. But we're 4 years hence from the resignation. The man loves what he's doing in terms of the practice of law. While he was AG, the foreclosure crisis was just starting. He started working on that then. When the criminal case came about and the community service came about, he had an opportunity to perform community service through pro bono work, and he did that. Okay? And in doing that pro bono work, he has helped many, many people who are having their homes foreclosed upon. And he's also making a practice out of it. And he's helping a lot of people. And those people, because he's already suffered penalties, should not be deprived of their lawyer. We know that this court ought to do something about this, and we are not suggesting you shouldn't. But we're simply saying that the suspension should be stayed. I would like to reserve the remainder of my time, if I may.
Okay.
Thank you.
Counsel.
Thank you. Chief Justice O'Connor, other distinguished members of this court, my name is Joseph Caligiuri, and I represent the Office of Disciplinary Counsel in this matter. I would first like to address a couple of points that Mr. Matthews raised. The first, he talks about the mitigation evidence, and he put great weight on the fact that the respondent, Mr. Dan, resigned his office. And that is a fact. He did resign his office on May 14, 2008. However, that resignation had nothing to do with the underlying misconduct that brings us here today. The Ohio Ethics Commission initiated its investigation on May 2, 2008. 12 days later, the respondent resigned for reasons that are outside the record in this case. The Ohio Ethics Commission's investigation didn't culminate until May of 2010 when the respondent pled guilty. So although it is a fact that he resigned, it really is not connected to the misconduct in the case like it was in Forbes and in Carroll.
Well, how can we be sure? I'm trying to remember what all unfolded. Was the inspector general or one of those officials hot after the attorney general?
Well, the inspector general and the Ohio Ethics Commission collaborated to initiate the investigation.
So, if I'm remembering this correctly, they were looking under every bed and sheet, and maybe that's a poor choice of words, but they were looking at operations of the office. That I think there was some dispute as to whether or not that's how he ran the office. The appropriate inquiry of the inspector general. That's what I seem to recall, is that there was a pretty red hot dispute that the inspector general or someone in officialdom had far exceeded what their statutory duties were in scrutinizing the attorney general's office.
There's no doubt that the commission investigated the respondent and that it was an exhaustive investigation. My only point in bringing this up is that that investigation didn't start until 12 days before he resigned, and it took 2 years to culminate. So to come in and say that the resignation should be looked upon as a mitigating factor is a bit disingenuous. I think the resignation was related to other events other than what brings us here today, which is the filing of false financial disclosure statements and providing improper compensation to other AG employees. But we feel that the sole issue before this court today is whether or not the board was justified in recommending an actual suspension from the practice of law. And Relator asserts that the board was justified. And we cite three factors that we would like this court to consider. And the first is that the respondent, when he committed this misconduct, was actively engaged in the practice of law. He was serving as this state's chief legal officer. And the respondent himself agrees with the board's finding in paragraph 33 of the report that the respondent's position as attorney general set him apart from other lawyers, and that he should be held to a higher standard. The second factor that this court should consider is the fact that the respondent has been previously disciplined. It's this aggravating factor that distinguishes this case from the other cases in which public officials have been subjected to discipline, including former Governor Taft, Mr. Forbes, and Gregory Carroll, who was the executive director of the Barber Board. None of those individuals, all of whom had stayed suspensions or reprimands, had previous discipline. And Mr. Dan's previous discipline was only 3 years before he committed the misconduct in this case. So he clearly was not deterred from his initial public reprimand.
That was related to his private practice, was it?
Absolutely. It was an incidence of neglect in a domestic relations matter, and he received a reprimand. The reason why we feel that's an important factor in this case is because of the proximity in time. Just 3 years later, he's committing misconduct again in a much more visible office where he's being entrusted with the public's trust. And then the third factor that we feel this court should take into consideration is the board's explicit finding that the respondent tried to explain away his misconduct at the disciplinary hearing. And Mr. Matthews has stood up here today and said, well, he was just explaining how things happened. And that's true. He was explaining how things happened. But every time he said he accepted responsibility, he would turn around and blame somebody for giving him misinformation about his financial disclosure statements. And Justice McGee Brown, you brought up a great point with the private jet. I mean, Mr. Dan testified at the hearing that he was thinking in his own mind of the FEC guidelines for reporting and put down the price of 2 first-class tickets. And then on the form, which is Exhibit 5 on page 6, it says right on there, describe the source of expense. And he puts down Democratic Attorney General's Association when that wasn't the source. The source was BFB aircraft, which was partially owned by a campaign contributor who had given him $10,000. And that was the false information on that form. Not to mention, he put down 2 airfare tickets, allegedly, worth $7,000, when in fact the plane alone cost $20,000. So, you know, that was his own thought process as he testified at the hearing. Right? At the same time, with regard to the other allegations, he would simply say, well, I got advice from a lawyer, I got advice from a non-lawyer, and I should have rolled up my sleeves and done something, but I didn't. The fact remains he pled guilty. He pled guilty to filing financial disclosure forms, and he pled that he knowingly filed financial disclosure
forms. Mr. Caligari, Mr. Matthews made a point about this court responding to that last argument that you made regarding what an attorney may do at a hearing in explanation, in trying to describe how something occurred, why something occurred. Are you suggesting that we discourage attorneys from saying anything in their defense at a hearing?
No, not at all. I mean, I would expect that attorneys would come in and tell how and why things happened when they're asked, and that's fine. The problem is here is on one hand, you have him pleading guilty, saying that he did things knowingly, and then you come into disciplinary disciplinary hearing, and say you didn't know that anything was wrong. And that's exactly what he testified to in his defense, that when he filed that form, he did not know that anything was wrong. And that's just inconsistent, not only with his plea, but with the evidence. So it's entirely appropriate for an attorney to come in and defend themselves and to mitigate, present mitigation evidence. That's not what happened in this case. What happened in this case is what the board found, and that's that he did not accept full responsibility for his misconduct. So when this court considers those three factors, we would ask that you impose a six-month actual suspension.
Well, counsel, what about the mitigation of this extensive pro bono activity subsequent to his court-ordered pro bono responsibilities, and the fact that he has letters of recommendation and support testifying as to work ethic and actual benefit to disadvantaged clients?
Yeah, there's no doubt that Mr. Dan has done good work. He continues to do good work in that area. A couple of his clients testified to that. We just feel that that's one mitigating factor, which obviously this court should consider, as did the board. It's just outweighed by the fact that he has a previous discipline history and the fact that he committed this misconduct while serving as the chief law enforcement officer for the state of Ohio. Thank you.
Mr. Matthews, you have a little over 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. We want to address disciplinary counsel's recommendation. Disciplinary counsel, first of all, Mr. Dan went to disciplinary counsel after he participated in the criminal context, went to them and said, I want to work with you on resolving the disciplinary.
So are you saying he self-reported?
Well, it was, everybody knew about it.
It was all over the newspapers, for God's sakes, you
right,
know.
Right. Everybody knew about it, but he did come forward. He didn't wait for them. Let's just put it that way.
All right. So you're not saying that deserves great weight?
Well, he stepped forward. Right. I agree. He cooperated in their process. He attempted to resolve the matter by discipline by consent, which this court has acknowledged is a good thing, even if it doesn't work. And in that discipline by consent agreement, knowing everything that they know now except the way that he might testify at the hearing, the disciplinary counsel recommended a stayed 6-month suspension, okay, in connection with the discipline by consent. They went into the hearing precisely the same way, 6-month stayed suspension, okay? Mr. Dan testifies at the hearing. They don't particularly like the way that he testified. They're not advocating precisely the way they are now, that it was so off the mark, but they didn't like precisely the way he testified, so they recommended a 1-year stayed suspension. Okay. Now, an independent office, you know, they serve the prosecutorial function. They're not here on behalf of the board. Now, they're recommending an actual suspension in agreement with the board. They don't know anything different than they knew at the end of the hearing after Mr. Dan testified. Okay?
So are you saying that they shouldn't be advocating on behalf of the board? They should be rejecting the board's determination here and advocating for a different result?
Well, I'm just simply saying they should make an independent recommendation. They're here to protect the public, but they should make an independent recommendation.
Well, then who's going to be before us to present the represent the board if they're going to be here making an independent recommendation?
Well, the board makes its own. The board recommends to you. The board recommends to you what they think the sanction should be. They hear the evidence. They act as the prosecutor. The board hears the evidence. The board makes a recommendation to you.
Who's going to be here representing the board and its recommendation if the disciplinary counsel should be here in an independent role? That's only my question.
Right.
And it may be a rhetorical question.
Right. Well, nobody's here for the board is my answer. Nobody should be here for the board. The board makes their own. That's the way the system works. And our point is, you know, okay, change your recommendation a couple of times if you think that there's something there to do that, but you know, here they had all of the facts before them, and they thought that a state suspension was appropriate as well. That's all I'm saying.
Well, that's not the position they're arguing, and they can certainly argue for themselves, as they have here. So for you to point that out to us, you know, we could have read that in the record.
Yes.
Whether that is meaningful or not, I'm unsure. But what I don't know that I heard you address the fact that your client has previously experienced disciplinary activity and was the beneficiary of a public reprimand, and that had to do with the neglect of a legal matter entrusted to him, correct?
Right. And not to minimize, but it's a single instance of neglect, which normally you don't see, by the way. Normally,
yeah, the vast majority of attorneys don't do that. You're right. We don't normally see that.
Right. So he commits a single instance of neglect. He enters a discipline by consent for that, and he's publicly reprimanded. And I want to talk about the timing a little bit. Yes, that disciplinary case was in 2005. That's when the determination came out. The conduct was several years before that. Okay. Again, not to minimize it, but this is not something that happens one day and then the next day he's committing additional misconduct. It's completely unrelated, single instance of neglect. He came forward and admitted misconduct when in most instances people aren't disciplined for that, is all I'm saying. So, yes, he has been disciplined before. That should be taken into consideration, but we believe that when you look at your precedent and you look at the record in this case, that this case should be treated more like the Forbes case. It's different in some respects, but Mr. Forbes, by no stretch of the imagination, did he come in and just simply minimize, as Relator is saying that Mr. Dan did. He denied everything, pretty much everything that he had already admitted to in a criminal plea. And so we urge you to follow your precedent. We do urge you to take into account all of the good work that Mr. Dan has done recently in his practice, including a lot of pro bono work to help many people who would be deprived of their lawyer if his license is suspended. What good are we doing in that circumstance? We urge you to impose a state suspension. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you please adjourn?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.